Golf Today.
Hey there, welcome inside our Golf Channel Worldwide headquarters. I'm George Savarikas with Eamon Lynch. This is an hour-long edition of Golf Today as we're gearing up for the final leg of the Florida Swing, the PGA Tour stop with the Valspar Championship. But a lot of the preamble to this week's event has been based on the meeting that happened on Monday in the Bahamas with the player directors on the PGA Tour, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan, as well as PIF Chief Governor Yasser Al-Rumayyan and some of the reps for PIF. It's been fascinating to get the comments made by players on the back end, alluding to either what transpired in the meeting or big picture their thoughts on next steps for potential unification down the road and how that could look like. There still isn't really a clear answer, Eamon.
No, and there's not much clarity as to what was actually said in the meeting either. That certainly that hasn't come out in public yet. But even Xander Schauffele was asked about it yesterday at Tampa, and he had, I thought, was a pretty interesting response to this idea of the controversy of LIV players potentially returning with their pockets full, and does that cause resentment among guys like him? And he said he sleeps well at night with the decision he made not to go. And of course, he's a guy who's benefiting from the change that the tour has made in response to that. He's playing for higher purses, higher FedEx Cup bonuses, things like that. That might not be a sentiment that exists deeper down in the locker room among guys who see their opportunities start to dwindle in the PGA Tour, the potential for a smaller tour, lesser tournaments out there. So guys who then see LIV guys returning and perhaps not having earned a spot back on the tour, I think would be a little bit more resentful. So that's going to be a fascinating one to work out. Under what criteria do those guys return? If you had status, do you get it back? Or otherwise, do you earn it?
That's kind of the biggest unsolved mystery.
And that could derail a lot of stuff in this.
No, for sure. And I do think there are a lot of guys in the, call it 60 to 125 range, that would like some very punitive measures meted out for LIV players to come back. There are other guys who are like, hey, they took the risk of going to LIV. They haven't had world ranking points for a couple years. We shouldn't go overly punitive because it helps our product if these guys have a pathway that we can figure out from a qualification standpoint to come back to the tour. Then let's have some of these big names back if and when that ever transpires.
If and when. But it's a thorny issue for sure.
Oh, for sure. All right, let's turn our focus back to the PGA Tour. It's the finale in the Sunshine State PGA Tour with a four-week stay in Florida. It's the Valspar Championship, the Snake Pit. Holes 16 through 18 at Innisbrook's Copperhead course await some of the best players in the world. And Keira K. Dixon has been our reporter on site all week and has been on the ground ahead of the Valspar Championship. Keira, what do you have today?
Well, George, before we shift focus to the Valspar Championship, meetings for the PGA Tour off the course continue. The new PGA Tour Enterprises board actually met for the first time yesterday. And PGA Tour Enterprises, as a reminder, is separate from the PGA Tour's established nonprofit 501c6, with their mission to be leading all commercial activities related to the PGA Tour, focusing on fan engagement, growth, developing new media sponsorship, and commercial opportunities. So the six player directors on the PGA Tour Policy Board are also members of this new PGA Tour Enterprises Board. Several of them are in the field here this week at the Valspar Championship. I was able to speak with one of them who told me that the meeting was yesterday at 4 p.m. It lasted for a couple of hours, and they're pretty much still just in the orientation phase of figuring out exactly how this will look moving forward. And in terms of player directors' involvements from a week-to-week basis, the player director told me that the other folks on the board, the business folks on the board, will probably meet weekly, and then the players will add their sentiments as needed, on an as-needed basis. Now, in terms of the actual content, I spoke with a few other players who believe that when it comes to just that initial meeting, that it's important to establish first steps, the bylaws, actually taking account of what the PGA Tour assets are, how to grow the PGA Tour assets, how to get more monetization. transition out of the PGA Tour assets. And the folks that they're working with, they're really leaning on, you know, the likes of SSG, Arthur Blank, Andrew Cohen, John Henry. These are the powers that be behind the NFL, MLB, soccer, and sports internationally, and they know exactly how to grow and monetize a product. Players here are, in terms of how those decisions impact them, it could impact formats, what cuts look like, what guaranteed money looks like, all of that that might impact also the entertainment product as well. So plenty of questions still to be answered, but a first meeting is the first step.
First of likely many meetings when it comes to PGA Tour Enterprises. Just a reminder for the audience, what exactly is PGA Tour Enterprises? Kira alluded to it from a high-level standpoint, for-profit venture led by the Strategic Sports Group. They came to that agreement with the PGA Tour back on January 31st. Their SSG's investment in PGA Tour Enterprises worth up to $3 billion. The deal leaves room for a future co-investment from the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, 13-member board of directors, 9 PGA Tour directors, and 6 current player directors, 4 SSG directors, including a couple of the names that Kira mentioned, John Henry and Arthur Blank. A lot of the conversation with the PGA Tour and next steps had been, okay, they need to align themselves with a group that has a dynamic thought process and what the tour could look like going forward, and then from a global marketing standpoint, figure out how to open the PGA Tour beyond just the U.S. market. And I think, Eamon, if you were starting the PGA Tour today, I don't think the model that they've had for the last, what would it be, 45 years or 55 years would be the model that you would select. But we haven't gotten any details yet on what the look is going to be like going forward.
No, and I'm assuming, generously perhaps, but I'm assuming there is a plan for exactly what this looks like, and that plan has been agreed to by the SSG guys in terms of what the goals, what the vision is out there. But this may not also be the model that guys like Arthur Blank, John Henry would automatically assume is going to work, because a governance model that is controlled by the athletes seems potentially rife for conflicts of interest. You know, players tend to make, we've seen this with Liv, players make decisions based on where they are in their career, their own particular preferences or friendships or alliances or biases, whatever it is. So it's going to be interesting. It was interesting when Kira was told by the players that they may not be part of regular week-to-week meetings as PGA Tour Enterprises gets underway and leave a lot of it to the business side, because then that kind of takes away the right of players who have then absented themselves from that process to then gripe about it later. This is a business that ought to be controlled by business minds who have the support of the players. But the idea that the players themselves have a controlling voice, which I do think a lot of the players do believe they have a controlling voice in this, that could be a reckoning that has to be had at some point in terms of the decision-making process that's good for business versus what the players think is necessarily good for them.
And the pendulum's been swinging all over the place. June 6th, no player input. Now the last 7 or 8 months, the player input has almost exceeded the voice of PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan. Every other sport that's collectively bargained, you have a CBA, you have a player union rep who is then at the table with the league and owners. You would think for the players, there's got to be just a funneling of their input to one voice that has their best interests, a la like a Joe Ogilvy type, although he is the conduit between both boards. I'm so curious as far as when SSG is going to publicly state, this is the new model that we see going forward, and here's how we're going to innovate and grow the reach of the PGA Tour, because all we hear right now are buzzwords on monetization of assets and all that. Okay, talk to me like I'm 5. What does that mean? What is this going to look like? And not just for the rest of this season or 25, but for the next 5 to 10 years. What are the untapped markets that the PGA Tour hasn't been able to realize under this existing kind of league structure that they've had?
And certainly no one, and we keep hearing from guys, no one is going to emerge with everything they want from any of these discussions. When the players start getting unhappy, they're going to hear about it a lot more. We're going to continue this conversation now with a golf Today, roundtable, we're joined by Taylor Zarzar of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio and Josh Carpenter, who's the assistant managing editor of Sports Business Journal. Josh, I want to start with you. You write a lot about the executive administration of sport across many sports. How feasible is it that active players are going to be able to have a significant controlling or active role in the board management of PGA Tour enterprises? Because some of them are still trying to win trophies. Some are still trying to just keep their card. It doesn't seem sustainable in the long term to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to hear Kira's report just a minute ago about, you know, players not necessarily being in on these regular meetings. You've certainly seen players at the PGA Tour level kind of insert themselves a little bit more, as we've seen in recent months, to get more of that control. You've seen it, you know, George, you mentioned earlier talking about unions, you know, and other leagues, that sort of thing. Look at the NBA, for example. Players in the NBA have a lot of control over right now over where they play. You see a LeBron James, you see a Stephen Curry. A lot of big name players can kind of go to their teams and say, I don't really want to play here. These players have a lot of control. Is that sustainable at the PGA Tour level? I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out at kind of that board level.
Taylor, golf fans, do you think they're reaching a point of exhaustion with everything that's happening outside the ropes, or is this temporary until major season, which has now had the added emphasis of everyone coming together four times a year?
Beyond that, George, I mean, you're a big Missouri Tiger, and I know that all that's going on in college sports is frustrating right now with the transfer portal and NIL. But when you watch your Mizzou Tigers play on Saturdays, you're not thinking about all of those things. You're concentrating on the game. You want to talk about whether Mizzou has a chance to win 10 games and get to a big bowl game and have a big season. And I think once the tournaments begin, certainly that's the case with our listeners. That's the case with your viewers. I do think, though, George, there's interest on Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. I think these are the days to have these types of discussions about the future of the game, because we're all wondering what our sport is going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. But by the time the Valspar Championship is going on tomorrow, I think that's when it's time to concentrate on the tournament. What we got last week at the Players' Championship was a perfect example of that. Everybody that connected to that tournament said, thank you. We're concentrating on a thrilling finish with the best players in the world.
It's interesting, though, so many of these conversations we're hearing don't involve the executives who are investing and making decisions. We don't hear from Jay Monahan a lot. We don't hear from John Henry at all. Josh, a lot of these questions seem to go to players every week who have taken this position of advocates or, in some cases, pretty active board members. Is there any example out there of a sport that is successful by having the athletes so close to the levers of power in the business and political sense of the sport?
I mean, I'll just use the NBA example I used a minute ago. I mean, I would say, like, the NBA is, yes, their viewership has been down a little bit in recent years, but still the NBA is wildly popular based on some of that kind of player control, I would say, based on players being able to kind of dictate where, you know, their star players being able to dictate where they want to play. If you look at the NBA week to week, a lot of people are interested in that kind of free agency and who's going to play where, almost from my standpoint, almost more than the games themselves sometimes. And so I don't know if you would see that, like I said, you know, at the PGA Tour level, where they're not necessarily controlling, you know, a different team they're playing on week to week. But that's a pretty good example in my mind.
Taylor, how do you think the Strategic Sports Group will have its impact felt in the coming months?
Well, I think that they're going to do a deep dive in what's happening with the PGA Tour and what they're monetizing at the PGA Tour. And, you know, as an example, PGA Tour Live, what you guys do on Golf Channel, what we do on SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, all the different ways that they're connecting to the audience. I think they will take a deep dive into what we're currently doing with that and how fans are consuming it. I think that's the biggest thing that they'll do. I mean, I'll admit, as a diehard Red Sox fan who's very frustrated that the Strategic Sports Group is spending so much time on this and no starting pitching for the Red Sox in 2024, they have done a phenomenal job of growing the Red Sox audience through the years because of the ways that they connect to their audience through streaming devices, the radio, through television. And I think that that's what John Henry, Sam Kennedy, and others, Tom Werner, will focus their interest on. But, you know, to the point that Josh and each of you are making, it's fascinating to me, Kira's report about Webb Simpson, Peter Malnati, and these guys going to the Bahamas after they competed in the Players to try to work out a unification agreement. And then they have a meeting last night about the future of the Strategic Sports Group and the PGA Tour enterprises. Oh, by the way, your tee time's tomorrow in the Valspar Championship. I mean, that is a lot to handle. And I do think, as Eamon said, and I hate when he makes great points, Joe Ogilvie and some other people that used to be PGA Tour players are probably best positioned to serve in those roles moving forward and represent the players' interests.
So much of what we've seen over the last couple of years, Josh, has gone through the PGA Tour's policy board, which has, you know, it's been there forever, as long as the tour itself, in terms of governance. Is that now a diminished body left to do housekeeping with whatever player grievances are, and the actual shape of the future of this sport is going to be seen through the board of PGA Tour Enterprises, the for-profit entity?
Yeah, maybe in the short term, it takes a little bit of a backseat, just because all this focus, you know, Taylor mentioned the monetization of the game and kind of where that goes. That's going to be largely focused on PGA Tour Enterprises. So maybe you do see a diminished role for the policy board in the short term as Enterprises gets kind of ramped up and gets going. But I think in the long term, there's still a lot of important things, you know, governance across the game that'll be decided on that policy board. You still have a lot of crossover between the two boards. Short term, maybe yes, but long term, I think it'll still have a pretty important place for the PGA Tour.
Taylor, yesterday John Rahm did a preview press conference for the Masters tournament as the defending champion. He had some interesting comments, and some of them you see right here on reunifying the game. He said, "I still respect everybody on both sides, respect the game of golf above all. Now the future of the game at this point is up to the people higher up. I think I've said it before. I think there's a way of coexisting. And if there's some type of union, I don't know what that looks like. But again, I just want to be able to see the best in the world compete against the best in the world, whatever that looks like." And he had some other comments about missing tournaments that he was the defending champion on this season. It sounded in some ways like a note of regret. Do you think John Rahm's kind of impatient, looking at Scottie Scheffler out there now as the undisputed number one, and John Rahm thinking, well, I'd like actually to be playing against that guy?
Well, the two of us, Eamon and I, recently were visiting with a current PGA Tour player who expressed that John has some regret about this long before John made these comments yesterday, and it certainly sounds like it. I think, Eamon, he thought that by leaving and going to live, certainly getting hundreds of millions of dollars that comes with it, that he also would unify the game, that almost immediately we would have some announcement that everyone would be able to play in the same place. And I think he's disappointed and a bit regretful that that has not happened yet. I don't know that necessarily he's willing to fork over all the hundreds of millions of dollars that Liv and the Public Investment Fund gave him, but I do think that it's clear he would like to come back and play in some of those tournaments. Webb Simpson recently talked about how there's probably a handful of guys that would like to do that and they would like to have back in their tournaments. I don't know that we'll ever see Dustin Johnson or Phil Mickelson or Lee Westwood or Henrik Stenson play in PGA Tour events ever again, and I don't think they want to. But I do think that there are a number of guys, Rahm included, that would like to do that.
Let's do one final question here. Josh, curious if you could paint the picture for us on what model you would want to see the PGA Tour now implement with this PGA Tour Enterprises going forward in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, I think you could look at it, you know, from a couple different angles, George. You know, I think the one of the things that people talk about a lot, and there's a lot of, you know, hand-wringing about, is the television product. You know, there are too many ads, the commercial load's too big. I think Jay Monahan spoke in August about this new investment coming in and how that could potentially alter the TV product. Maybe you have presented by hours like we've seen, you have more of those. I think a lot of people really want that TV product to get better. You've heard a lot of talk about kind of a global tour. You know, Rory's made a lot of comments about a global tour. I still wonder, with the tour's current TV partners, if they're going to go for that. Is CBS going to go for one of their premier tournaments airing in the middle of the night because it's in Australia or in Asia? That's why CBS, your own network, NBC, they love that 3 to 6 p.m. window on Sunday afternoons. It's such a prime window. And so I think that's been probably one of the main holdups to kind of seeing this global tour, is these network partners. Their ratings are going to go down a ton if these events are airing overnight. So I think that's one of those things that's been tossed around a lot, but I still am kind of hesitant to say that global tour is really going to happen.
Taylor, quickly, do you have any thoughts on the model you'd like to see?
Well, I just wanted to add to what Josh said. I think that if that ever comes to existence, what would make the most sense is for those international tournaments to be played in January and in July. In January is when you could go to Australia, you could go to Japan, you could go places like that while the NFL is ruling the roost, college football is as well with their new playoff system that's about to be unveiled. And then in July, you could have the British part of the schedule as well. So I think that would be the time to do it. But to Josh's point, the rest of the year, the traditional times where we've been watching a professional golf finish between 3 and 6 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, I don't think that CBS, NBC, or any American network is going to give up on that.
Perfect plug for catching the Valspar here on Golf Channel tomorrow at 2 Eastern. Guys, thanks for the time. Appreciate the conversation. All right, we are less than a month out from the Masters, where John Rahm will look to defend his title at Augusta National. This will be the first time we're going to see the former world number one compete alongside PGA Tour players since he left for LIV Golf back in December. On Tuesday, Rahm spoke during a video conference call for the Masters and gave a candid response about not competing on the PGA Tour. Here's what Rahm had to say, and in his statement, he said, "I'm not going to lie for everybody who said this would be easy. Some things have been, but not being able to defend some titles that mean a lot to me hasn't. I love Palm Springs, for example. I've been able to win there twice. Riviera is about as charismatic a golf course as we have. It's definitely a week that's fantastic for a lot of us, and it's a fan and player favorite. Not being there was difficult. I still watch the broadcast. I still watch golf because I love watching it. But it's hard. It's hard not to be at the Phoenix Open at the end of February. It was hard not to be at Hawaii because it's another tournament that my family enjoys and I've done fantastic on." So, Eamon, what do you make of Rahm's comments?
A little touch of FOMO there, isn't there? A little fear of missing out. It's interesting. He actually seems... I buy the argument that Taylor Zarzur was just making in our roundtable. I do think John Rahm believed that he would be a catalyst whenever he left, that it would force things farther and faster down the road. And now John Rahm's realizing that that isn't actually going to happen anytime soon, that there is progress, one assumes, coming from this meeting, but it's not going to be hasty. John Rahm's not coming back to the PGA Tour with his pockets full anytime soon, regardless of what he may have been told by anyone who was encouraging him to go over there. And it seems a little poignant, some of the comments, that he realizes that he's kind of missing out on events that mean something to him, that mean something to his family. But ultimately, this is a lesson all the LIV guys have had to learn, that decisions have consequences. And particularly around the world rankings, you hear them talk as though they ought to be insulated from the decisions they made and the consequences of those decisions. Could not have been a clearer case for John Rahm. He'd had a year and a half of advance notice what happens to PGA Tour players who go to LIV. You don't play regular PGA Tour events anymore. That may change at some point. But he sounds surprised by a decision that he made, or the consequences of it that he just shouldn't be surprised by.
100% agree. I appreciate how introspective John is. And I think part of what makes John so impressive is English second language and how he's developed one of the most thoughtful guys when it comes to once he's in front of a mic and meeting with the media. And however much it was reported, anywhere from what, 250 to 400 million or something like that. Big payday to go to LIV back in December. Now, 2 months later, he's talking about unification and saying wistfully how he's watching Golf Channel, thanks for the pub, or watching golf, period, and seeing tournaments that he won at that he can't defend at. It's like you can't get the bag and then we'll kind of say, oh, well, let's get everyone together. It's like, well, no. You left. You're not playing against the best players in the world. You do have some stars you play against, but now you're in this league that doesn't have the same reach, doesn't have the same coverage, and doesn't really resonate with the casual golf fan. And now you're realizing the impact of your decision. And you kind of live with it at this point, because instead of this summer, everyone's saying, oh, let's sing Kumbaya and you're back for the FedEx Cup playoffs, it might not be till 26 or 27. Like, this is the road you're taking for 3 years. So you got to look in the mirror and just own it.
And he did make some other comments when he's very much aware of what Scottie Scheffler is doing out there. Scottie, clearly the undisputed number one in this game right now. But you get the sense John Rahm would like to dispute that. But John Rahm ain't playing against Scottie Scheffler anymore. And he did point out that last year he played 8 times before he got to Augusta National and won the Masters. This year he will play 5. He will play his next event the week before the Masters, a Trump Doral, a live event. He didn't play the week before the Masters last year. So there's a lot of changes in the run-up to his defence of the Masters title this year. And it's going to be really interesting to see if any impact that has on him.
Big time. And it was interesting because he said there are 3 or 4 spots I'd like to play. That put his schedule from 5 to 8 or 9 events. So he was kind of thinking out loud. The new normal, you can't really pick and choose when you play. If you're on the LIV Golf Tour, you're playing when they tell you, okay, this is how your schedule's going to look leading up to the majors. He's going to have to figure out how to get his game peaking for Augusta if he's going to capture that green jacket for the 2nd straight year. Winding it down this Wednesday on Golf Today. Here's what to watch for on Golf Channel this week. Valspar kicks off tomorrow, 2 o'clock Eastern. That's where you get the first round coverage. LPGA Tour at 6 p.m. Eastern. DP World Tour in Singapore for the Porsche Singapore Classic. And the PGA Tour Champions in Newport Beach, California for the Hogue. That'll kick off on Friday.